Chapter 7. A Fishy Apartment. If someone had told Stiopa Likodiev the next morning, "Stiopa, get up this instant or you'll be shot," Stiopa would have said, in a languid, barely audible voice,
"Shoot me, do whatever you want with me, but I'm not getting up."
Giant bells rang in his head. Brown blobs with fiery green rims floated between his eyeballs and closed lids. Stiopa tried to remember what had happened, but only one memory sprang to mind. Yesterday, he had apparently stood in an unknown location, holding a napkin, and trying to kiss some lady, whom he promised to visit the next day, exactly at noon. The identity of the lady, and for that matter, the current time, date, and month, were a mystery to Stiopa. Worst of all, he could not tell where he was. He peeled open his stuck left eyelid and realized that he was lying flat on his bed. Then his head was struck by a jolt of pain so powerful that he shut his eye and moaned. Let us explain. Stiopa Likodiev, director of the Variety Theatre, awakened that morning in his own apartment, which he happened to share with the deceased Berlioz, in a large, six-story, U-shaped building on Sadovaya Street. It should be noted that this apartment, number 50, had long had a bad, or at least odd, reputation. A mere 2 years ago, it was owned by the jeweller de Fougeray's widow, Anna Franchevna de Fougeray, a respectable and very practical 50-year-old lady, leased three of her five rooms to tenants, one apparently named Belomut, and another whose name has been lost. And then 2 years ago, its residents began disappearing without trace. One weekend, a policeman showed up at the apartment and called a tenant, the one whose name has been lost, to the hall, asking him to drop by the police station for a few minutes to sign something or other. The tenant ordered Anfise, Anna Franchevna's long-time and devoted housekeeper, to tell anyone who called that he would be back in 10 minutes, and then left together with the respectful, white-gloved policeman. However, he did not return in the next 10 minutes, or, for that matter, ever. Most surprisingly, the policeman seemingly disappeared along with him. The tenant disappeared around Monday. On Wednesday, Belomut also vanished from the face of the earth, though under different circumstances. In the morning, the company car arrived as usual to take him to work, and take him it did, but it neither brought anyone back nor returned itself. Madame Belomut's horror and grief defied description. But alas, both sentiments were short-lived. On the same night, upon returning from the countryside, where she had urgently needed to go with Anfise for some reason, Anna Franchevna did not find Mrs. Belomut in the apartment. What's more, the doors of both rooms occupied by the Belomut couple had been sealed. 2 days passed. On the third day, Anna Franchevna, afflicted throughout all this by insomnia, again departed hastily for the countryside. Needless to say, she did not return. Left alone, Anfise cried her fill and went to bed some time after 1 in the morning. What happened to her then is unknown, though neighbours would later say that all through the night a mysterious tapping emanated from the fully lit number 50. In the morning, they discovered that Anfise was gone as well. The apartment remained sealed and empty for only a week, whereupon it was occupied by the late Berlioz with his spouse and this Stiopa fellow, also with a spouse. Both of their spouses disappeared in the space of 1 month, albeit this time not without a trace. Berlioz's spouse was apparently seen in Kharkov with some ballet master, while Stiopa's surfaced on Pozhedomka Street. It was rumoured that the Variety's director, using his countless connections, had managed to get her a separate apartment on the condition that she never show her face on Sadovaya again. At last, Stiopa decided to get up, no matter what superhuman feats it might require. Stiopa unstuck his fused eyelids and saw himself reflected in the mirror as a man wearing a dirty collared shirt and tie, as well as long johns and socks. His hair was sticking every which way, his eyes were swollen, and his bloated face was covered with black stubble. Such was the image he saw in the mirror, and next to the mirror he saw an unknown man, all dressed in black and sporting a black beret. Steopa sat down on his bed, and his bloodshot eyes popped out at the stranger as far as they could go. The stranger was first to break the silence.
"Good day, my dearest Stefan Bogdanovich."
There was a pause, after which Steopa said,
"What do you want?"
The stranger smiled amicably and took out a large gold watch with a diamond triangle on the lid. He let it ring 11 times and said,
11. For exactly 1 hour I have been waiting for you to wake up, as you had scheduled our appointment for 10. So here I am."
Steopa felt for his trousers on the chair next to the bed and whispered,
"Could you please tell me your name?"
"What?
You've forgotten my name, too?"
the stranger smiled.
"Forgive me,"
Steopa rasped, experiencing new gifts from his hangover.
"Dear Stefan Bogdanovich, follow the wise old rule. Treat like with like. The only thing that can bring you back to life is 2 shots of vodka with something hot and spicy to follow."
Steopa was a cunning man. No matter how sick, he understood that since he had been caught with his pants down, he had better confess to everything.
"To tell you the truth,"
he began, barely moving his tongue,
"yesterday I had a little..."
"Not a word more,"
the visitor replied, and slid aside on his chair. His eyes bulging, Steopa saw a tray served on a small table. It contained sliced white bread, pressed caviar in a tiny bowl, pickled white mushrooms on a saucer, something in a little pot, and finally vodka, in a spacious decanter belonging to the jeweller's wife. Steopa was especially amazed by the fact that the decanter was foggy from the cold. This was to be expected, however, for it sat in a bowl packed full of ice. In other words, everything was served up neatly and skillfully. The stranger prevented Steopa's astonishment from reaching painful proportions by deftly pouring him 1/2 a shot of vodka. Steopa raised the glass to his mouth with a quivering hand. The accursed green blobs dissolved before his eyes. Words began to come out more easily, and, most importantly, Steopa remembered a few things. More specifically, that he had been in Shodnia yesterday, at a cottage belonging to the sketchwriter Hustov, who had him delivered there in a taxi. Right now, however, Steopa was far more interested in the present day, and particularly in the appearance of a stranger in his bedroom, with vodka and snacks, no less. That's what would be mighty nice to clear up.
"Well, then, I trust you've remembered my name by now?"
But Steopa could only grin shamefacedly and spread his hands.
"Volant, professor of black magic,"
the visitor said weightily, noticing Steopa's hesitation, and sequentially narrated all that had taken place. Yesterday afternoon he arrived in Moscow from abroad, headed immediately to Steopa, and pitched his act to the Variety. Steopa telephoned the Moscow Regional Performance Commission and settled the matter. Steopa paled and flapped his eyelids, signing a contract for 7 shows with Professor Voland. Steopa's mouth fell open, and arranged to meet Voland today at 10 in the morning to discuss the details. And so Voland came. Upon arriving, he was met by Grunia, the housekeeper, who explained that she had just walked in herself, as she was not a live-in maid, that Berlioz was not at home, and that if the visitor wished to see Stefan Bogdanovich, he should proceed to the bedroom himself. Stefan Bogdanovich was so soundly asleep that she would not undertake to rouse him. Seeing Stefan Bogdanovich's condition, the artist sent Grunia to the nearest grocery for some vodka and a little food, and then to the pharmacy for ice and...
"Let me settle with you for that,"
a mortified Steopa whimpered, looking for his wallet.
"Oh, nonsense," exclaimed the performer, and would not hear of it.
The vodka and the snacks were thus explained, and still Steopa remained a miserable sight. He remembered decidedly nothing of the contract, and, so help him, had not met any Volands yesterday. Hustov was there, but Voland was not.
"Could I take a look at the contract?"
Stiopa asked quietly.
"Certainly, certainly."
Stiopa looked at the paper and froze. It was all there. First of all, Stiopa's own debonair signature, a slanted inscription on the side, penned by the hand of the financial director, Rimsky, authorizing the remittance of 10,000 rubles to the artist, Voland, in advance of 35,000 due for 7 performances. Moreover, here was Voland's own signature, indicating that he had already received these 10,000.
"What on earth is this?"
Stiopa wondered miserably, his head spinning. "The onset of sinister memory gaps?" But of course, now that the contract had been produced, further expressions of surprise would have been simply rude. Stiopa excused himself for a moment and ran in his socks to the phone in the hall. On the way there, he yelled towards the kitchen,
"Gronia!"
There was no reply. Then he glanced at Berlioz's study, located next to the hall, and was, as they say, flabbergasted. An enormous wax seal was hanging on a string from the door handle.
"Hello,"
rang out in Stiopa's head,
"as if I haven't enough to deal with."
Stiopa's mind began crawling with disturbing little thoughts about an article that he, as his lousy luck would have it, recently forced upon Mikhail Alexandrovich for publication in the journal. A pretty stupid article, too. Completely unnecessary and for precious little money. On the heels of the article came the recollection of a politically dubious dinner-time conversation, transpiring sometime around the evening of April the 24th, right here in the dining room, where Stiopa was having dinner with Mikhail Alexandrovich. Prior to the seal, the conversation could undoubtedly have been regarded as trivial. But now that the seal was here... "Oh, Berlioz, Berlioz," simmered in Stiopa's head. "I just can't get my head around it." But now was no time to grieve, so Stiopa dialed the number of Variety's financial director, Rimsky.
"Yes?"
came Rimsky's brusque, unpleasant voice from the receiver.
"Hello, Grigory Danilovich,"
Stiopa began quietly.
"It's Likudiev. Here's the thing. I have here this, Voland, the artist. So, then, I wanted to ask about tonight."
"Yeah, the Black Magician," Rimsky replied from the receiver. "The posters are almost done."
"Uh-huh," Stiopa said weakly. "Well, so long."
"So you'll be here soon?" Rimsky asked.
"Half an hour,"
Stiopa replied, hanging up, and clutched his burning head in his hands. Delaying in the hall any longer would have been impolite. Stiopa instantly formed a plan. Do everything possible to conceal his incredible forgetfulness and, as the first order of business, cunningly get the foreigner to divulge exactly what it was he intended to show tonight at Stiopa's sworn responsibility, the Variety. Stiopa turned away from the phone towards the hall mirror, seldom dusted by the lazy Grunia, and distinctly saw the reflection of a very strange character. Tall as a post, and wearing a pince-nez. The reflection appeared and vanished instantly. Alarmed, Stiopa peered further into the hall and was again shaken, for a gargantuan black cat passed by in the mirror and also disappeared.
"What's going on?" he thought. "Am I going mad? Where are these reflections coming from?"
He glanced into the hall again and shouted fearfully,
"Gronia! Why is there a cat sauntering around in here? Where'd he come from? And who's that guy with him?"
"Don't worry, Stefan Bogdanovich,"
came a voice, belonging not to Gronia, but to the guest in the bedroom.
"The cat is mine. Don't be nervous. And as for Gronia, she's not here. I sent her to her hometown of Voronezh, as she's been complaining that you'll never give her time off."
The words were so unexpected and absurd that Stiopa decided he'd heard wrong. He trotted to the bedroom in utter confusion and froze at the door. His hair began to crawl, and tiny drops of sweat appeared on his forehead. The guest no longer occupied the bedroom alone, but had company. A second chair contained the same odd fellow who had appeared previously in the hall. Now he could be clearly seen, a feathery moustache, one lens twinkling in the pince-nez, the other missing. But the bedroom contained something far worse. Assuming an inappropriate pose, a third visitor sprawled on the jeweller's wife's ottoman. Namely, a black cat of terrifying proportions, holding a shot of vodka in one paw and a fork, which he had used to spear a pickled mushroom in the other. The bedroom's already dim light began to further recede in Steopa's eyes.
"So that's what madness feels like," he thought, grasping the doorpost.
"I see you are a little surprised, my dearest Stefan Bogdanovich," Voland inquired of Steopa, whose teeth were chattering. "And yet there's nothing to be surprised about. This is my entourage."
Here the cat drank some vodka, and Steopa's hand took a slide down the doorpost.
"And this entourage demands room," Voland continued. "So you'll see, there is one tenant too many in this apartment. And it seems to me that extra someone is none other than you."
"There's the one! There's the one!"
sang the tall, checkered man in a goat-like voice, referring to Steopa in the plural.
"Besides, they've been quite the swine lately, drinking, using their position to get involved with women, doing a hell of nothing, not like they could do anything in the first place, seeing as how they can't make the tiniest sense of what they've been assigned, pulling wool over the boss's eyes."
"Abusing the company car,"
snitched the cat, chewing on his mushroom. And as Steopa slipped all the way down to the floor, clawing at the doorpost with weakening hands, the fourth and final manifestation took place in the apartment. A short but exceptionally broad-shouldered creature stepped straight out of the dresser mirror, a bowler on his head and a fang jutting out of his mouth, rendering his already hideous visage even more revolting. To top it all off, he had flaming red hair.
"As for me," the new arrival contributed to the conversation, "I don't even understand how he got to be a director. He's as much a director as I am a bishop."
"You don't look like a bishop, Azazello,"
noted the cat, piling frankfurters onto his plate.
"That's what I'm saying,"
the redhead twanged, and turning to Voland, added respectfully,
"Permit me, messire, to kick him the hell out of Moscow."
"Scram!" the cat barked suddenly, his fur bristling. And then the bedroom began to spin around Steopa. Hitting his head on the doorpost and losing consciousness, he thought,
"I'm dying."
But he did not die. Opening his eyes slightly, he found himself sitting on something rocky. The air around him was full of noise. When he opened his eyes fully, he saw that the sounds came from the sea, and moreover, that the waves were breaking right at his feet, that in fact, he was sitting on the very edge of a pier, with a sparkling blue sea ahead and a beautiful mountain city behind. Unsure of what to do in such situations, Steopa rose on his shaking legs and headed to shore. A man was standing on the pier, smoking and spitting into the sea. He gave Steopa a bewildered look and stopped spitting. Then Steopa pulled the following stunt. He fell to his knees before the unknown smoker and said,
"I beg you, tell me what city this is."
"Really, no," said the heartless smoker.
"I'm not drunk," Steopa said hoarsely. "I'm ill. Something happened to me. I'm ill. Where am I? What city is this?"
"All right, it's Yalta."
Steopa sighed quietly and collapsed on his side, knocking his head on the warm stones of the pier.